All right. Well, hey, it's great to have you here this morning. My name's Kurt. I'm lead pastor. And pain takes a lot of different forms, and we're going to take a look at that today. In fact, today, this may be the heaviest, heavy weight of all, and at least it's the one that cuts the deepest, because, you know, this idea of how can there be a loving God that lets all these awful things happen in the world? Better question is, how can there be a loving God that lets all these awful things happen to me? Maybe you've asked that question, or maybe you've said, you know, how's come bad things always happen to good people? Maybe that's been your question, or maybe yours has been the flip of that. You know, how's come good things happen to bad people? I mean, how's come the bad people are always getting the things that I want? Those are some of the questions that we wrestle through. I've got a kind of a bigger one that I've been wrestling through recently. It's, you know, more along the lines of, why did the Eagles break up and yet bands like One Direction just go on and on and on? I mean, and, you know, some things we just never get to the bottom of. I mean, we're never going to understand them. And so we're going to kind of dive into some of these questions today. And before we do that, I want to give a couple caveats today. Just because this is a big, big subject, and number one, we're not going to begin to, you know, allow you to believe that we 100% everything when it comes to suffering. Nobody does. In fact, I get very skeptical when somebody's like, "Oh yeah, I got that whole pain and suffering thing figured out. I know exactly why it happens, or here's why you're experiencing this." I mean, I get real skittish around people like that, you know, because listen, you know, Crosspoint, we're willing here to dive into things that we don't 100% understand. That's just what we do around here. I mean, gosh, if we only talked about what we knew, you'd be out of here already, right? I mean, listen, PJ would talk about, like, guitars. Eric would talk about landscaping. You've had some good landscaping stories. My wife would say that I would talk a lot about understanding women, because that's what I do really well. So, listen, this is a heavy morning. I'm pulling any punches to get a cheap thrill today, all right? I get accused of that every now and then, but I'm going to pull cheap thrills. So, you know, we're not going to begin to believe we understand everything about this. Another one, second thing, is, I'm not going to begin to believe that in 30 minutes I can unpack everything that needs to be unpacked on suffering. 30 minutes is barely going to scratch the surface, but I do think that we can begin to understand some things, because pain takes all kinds of different forms. I mean, pain could be a broken arm. Pain could be a broken heart. Pain could be, you know, the ethnic cleansing of an entire people group from a continent, you know, all the way down to a hate crime in our backyard. I mean, pain takes a lot of forms. And so, you know, as I think about some of the pain that I've experienced in my life, I mean, one of my first, thoughts went back to when I was in college. I was working a day job. I was working, you know, pulling cable for an internet company, paid well. I needed money to go to college. So, you know, I learned how to run Ethernet cable. And I was usually up in ceilings in construction projects similar to this. And I remember being up in the ceiling. They gave us all kinds of cool tools we didn't know really how to use, right? But I'm like a cheap tech, so they give me these cool tools. I had things called snips. Snips were like little sharp scissors to cut the cables, you know? So I'm up on a ladder, up in a ceiling. Ceiling tiles are out, and it's kind of dark up there. I'm running an Ethernet cable, and I'm going to snip the cable, and I slip and hit my index finger and cut halfway through my index finger. Feel the scissors bounce off the bone, and of course, there's blood everywhere. An emergency room was following, and I know some of you single ladies are like, "Man, where do I get a man like that?" I'm taken, all right? That was pain. That was pain. That was very, very painful. I think back earlier in my life to when I was 16 years old. I think about the day where I carried one of my best friend's caskets at the age of 16, who had been hit head-on by a driver who had a heart attack at the wheel. A Christian woman who had a heart attack, head-on collision with my friend, killed him. The captain of our basketball team. That was pain. I remember it went on. I mean, I remember playing that year. You know, we're out on the court, and I remember watching Brad's parents sit in the same seats they always sat in, with smiles on their face and tears in their eyes, as they watched their sons, their late son's friends, play, wishing he was still here. That was pain. I remember watching one of my buddies carry a tiny little casket, his newborn baby, down a long walk to a graveside. That's pain. That's pain. And every time I see, you know, another mass murder on the news, I mean, my reaction is just probably like yours. At first, I'm just like, "Oh, my word, here we go again. I'm disgusted with it." And then my next thought is, great, here we go. Another four-year-old girl, another five-year-old boy who's going to go home tonight, and his mom and dad are never going to be there again. And what do you say to that little five-year-old girl who, you know, hey, there's a loving God who cares about you. How does she process that? I recently was reading about some of the work being done in India and Nepal in the sex slave industry. You know, did you realize that there are 1.2 million girls every year that are forced into the sex slave industry in India? 1.2 million young girls forced against their will. And, you know, in prostitution, I thought, what is an 8-year-old or a 12-year-old girl that's forced into prostitution, what does she think about at night when she lays her head on a pillow about a God who loves her, who's all-powerful, and yet this is what she's experiencing? As I think about that, I think we don't have to look halfway around the world to find misery, do we? I mean, we've got it right here in this room. I mean, for many of us, we all have a story. We all have a story or two of pain and misery. And I wonder what you think about a God who's all-loving, all-powerful, and yet all of these awful things happen in my life. So I want us to kind of dive in and look at that today. And so, here we go, round number one. Round number one is going to be this. We're going to look at love over robots, because one of the questions that oftentimes comes up is people will say, you know, you say there's a God who is all-powerful, he's all-loving, and yet I see a lot of awful things happen in our world. Now, as I look at this, I can't create intellectual suicide on this, all right? When you look at those three things, you're like, one of those three things doesn't fit. And when you look at the third one, awful things, you've got all-powerful, all-loving God, and then awful things, you're like, well, I know the third one exists because I see it all the time. All you have to do is turn on the news. You see awful things all over the place. And so either God is not as all-powerful as we think that he is, or he's not as all-loving as we hope that he would be, because something's not adding up right here. So what I want us to do is I want us to kind of get to a certain place today where we can see and imagine in our minds. In fact, I want you to kind of go on a journey with me in our imaginations. I want to give you a word picture to maybe help us understand this and allow our imaginations to kick in together, all right? So you can close your eyes while I talk through this. You can keep your eyes open, whatever's helpful for you. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to imagine that you're God. All right. Now, some of you are like, well, man, that's not too hard. I do that all the time. I was just doing that last night. All right. But for others of you, this is going to be a little bit harder. All right. This is going to be a little more of a stretch. I want you to imagine that you're a king. All right. You're a very special king. And you've got an entire kingdom. In fact, everything in front of you, everything in your kingdom is yours. You own it all. You have it all. Anything you desire is there at your disposal. All right, everything you have in front of you is right there for you. Now, there's something else we know about you. We also know that you are incredibly loving. All right, so you're the most loving king that's ever existed. You're the most benevolent king there is in the land. All right, so I want you to imagine you're kind of like Bill Gates and Mother Teresa and me all packaged into one. All right, and if you have a problem with Mother Teresa, just replace her with somebody else that fits, you know, Bill Gates and I. Listen, I'm going for cheap humor, all right? Anything that'll get you to laugh. This is heavy today. All right, so you're all loving, you're all powerful, you're all knowing, all right? And what's the one thing, if you're that king, that you would want? What's the one thing that you would need if you have everything and can create everything? It's a simple answer. The answer is nothing, right? You don't need anything. You've created it all, except there's this whole loving thing that doesn't quite fit there yet. And so what do we do with love? You know, love, dang it, if love doesn't always complicate things for us. Love always puts a twist into the program. So, you know, the interesting thing about love is that love is something that we like to do what with? We like to give it. We like to share it, right? Love is always shared. And in fact, that's what love does. Love never keeps things for itself. It always shares with others. And so in this kingdom that you have, you own everything, you're all powerful, and you see that you want everyone else to experience love. But here's the problem. One of the other things we know about love is love always requires a choice. Love always requires a choice. You can't force someone to love someone. Now, we've heard stories of somebody who hated someone, or maybe they're in an arranged marriage, and they hated it, and they learned to love that individual. We've heard stories of that. But I have yet to ever hear of a story where someone was forced to generate the expression of love. You can't force someone to love. And so love, by definition, must be a choice. And so we have this all-powerful king, and if he's going to create a world where people are going to experience love, then he has to create a world where they actually choose it, because it can't be forced. So, could he create an environment where all creatures choose him and choose love? Well, of course he could, but then there's no choice, right? We're just robots. So, you know, one of the tightest scriptures that we see in the entire Bible on this is in 1 John chapter 4. In fact, here's what 1 John says. It says God, it's very simple, it says God is love. Well, sometimes we read this and we're like, well, that describes God. God is very loving, or God is one of the most loving beings. No, what this means is God is actually the definition of love. I mean, God is the definition. And so back to the kingdom, he wants people to experience his love. All right, he's all powerful, he's all knowing, and yet love can't be forced because otherwise we'd just be a bunch of robots. You know, that's what's so amazing as I think about my wife, Julie, and that every single morning when we wake up, that's kind of what makes waking up in the morning so special. You know, I wake up next to her because every morning she wakes up next to me. It's a choice. She doesn't have to be there. It's something where she chooses every day. And it's not always easy. I mean, there's moments where, you know, there's friction between us. So there's moments where, you know, marriage is difficult at times. And yeah, that's what makes every single morning that she's next to me so unique, is that it's a choice. And so what happens with this all-powerful king who also is all-loving and out of his love wants others to experience love? So I want you to imagine with me. I want you to imagine over on this side, there's door number one. Oh, there it is, right there. Look at that, door number one. So behind door number one is love. And behind love is God. In fact, everything behind door number one is God. It's all love. It's all, you know, God creates in completeness. So everything behind door number one is everything you ever need. You and I never have to go outside door number one to get what we need, to get what we desire, to feel fulfilled, because it all lies behind door number one. You're like, why couldn't a God just stopped right there? Why couldn't he have just given us one choice? Well, if he did give us just one choice, then we'd just be a bunch of robots. And so because love creates the twist, there has to be a choice, then God has to give us a choice other than love. So he creates door number two. And we don't know fully what's behind door number two other than we know that it isn't love. All right, because if love is behind number two, then it's the same thing as behind door number one, and then we're left with no choice again, right? So behind door number two is something, but it's the epitome of not love. And so I don't know what is exactly behind door number two, but now we have two choices. And so this is where we find God right here. This is your choice. You're the king of the kingdom. You have to give option number one, and God takes what we would define as the divine risk. The divine risk is this. It's where God gives us the risk to choose something that isn't love. It's the divine risk. God took the risk of saying, I want this for everybody I create. I want this for the inhabitants of the earth. And yet, because I love them, I have to give them the choice. Otherwise, they're robots, and they have the choice then to choose something that's not me. And so the Apostle Paul actually talks about this. He talks about this in the book of Romans. He's talking to the church in Rome, and he talks about where this came in. Here's what he said in Romans 5. He said, therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man and death through sin, and in this way death came to all people because all have sinned. And so what Paul's saying is this is a door number two thing right here, because the story about the story goes all the way back to the book of Genesis, all the way back to Adam and Eve. And here's the thing. You and I, through our whole life, we're flirting with door number two, right? God says everything you need is behind door number one, but you and I have this propensity within us to go and say, oh, man, I wonder what's behind door number two.